Hello, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. This is Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Have to do.
And Eric Asherslager.
Hello.
And you know how this works, kill some time before you get into your delightful July 4th weekend. So let's get right on it, Mac. What do you got to report?
I actually got a lot this week. I'll try to keep it brief here, but first I finally got out to see Prometheus.
All right, and I'm eager to hear what your thoughts on this.
It was interesting.
Is that like saying that girl's got a great personality?
there was stuff about it that I liked, and there was a lot of parts that kind of didn't work so well. You know, stuff that I liked, I mean, it was just really amazing visually. I mean, it's Ridley Scott, you know. He can point a camera at anything, and automatically it just looks great just because he's the one pointing the camera. I don't know how he does it. But, and there's some really suspenseful scenes. You guys have probably heard about the surgery scene that's in the movie. And
I really know nothing about this movie.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah,
zilch. Well, there's a scene involving surgery that's really intense, real nail-biting stuff. I'm not quite sure the plot and the characters worked as well as they could have. The characters aren't very likable.
Yeah, I did hear that. That is one thing.
Yeah. You know, because in the first Alien, you know, they were all, like, blue-collar guys. They're just these working stiffs. They just happen to be in space. But in this movie Prometheus, they've got these high-minded ideals where they're traveling into space to unlock the secrets of the universe and learn, you know, where life came from. And so they have all these philosophical debates about, you know, science versus belief and all this stuff. And it doesn't – I guess it's interesting, but it doesn't really sound like how people talk.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of these philosophical debates throughout the movie. So, and as for all the talk about is it or isn't it a prequel to Alien, I'll say right now it's totally a prequel to Alien.
Okay,
the callbacks are numerous.
So, I mean, at the very least, it exists in the same universe as Alien.
Oh, absolutely, it does.
Yeah, because it's Weiland, right? Whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Okay. That's a big part of it, and there's others too, but I won't spoil it. But. So, yeah, it was interesting. It was some cool scenes, some food for thought, but I think it could have been better in a lot of ways, too.
All right. Good review. So, exceeded or met or went below your expectations?
A little bit below expectations.
All right. Okay, anything else?
I also saw Brave.
And?
And I really liked it. I thought it was really great.
So, the plot wasn't derivative, because that's just what I get from the commercials. Like, you know, we've seen this plot before, but does Pixar do anything interesting with it?
Kind of. I'm not sure how much the commercials have spoiled for you, but there is a twist involving the girl's mom about halfway through.
Okay.
It kind of puts an interesting spin on the story, and the Pixar folks have a lot of fun with it. And, but I guess overall it's your basic fantasy adventure stuff. But it's just really fun. It's really likable. It's the animation is excellent, of course. It's Pixar really brings it just again and again. And there are folks on the internet who are saying that it's mediocre, or that it's another Cars 2, and I don't see that at all. I think this is heads in them, you know, just far and away better than Cars 2, which is just, you know, pandering and jokes for the sake of jokes. You know, this is a real story. Is you really, you know, get to know the characters, you really get invested in what's going on, but there is some humor and laughs in it as well. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I'm just kind of mentally hardwired to just dig fantasy adventure stuff. But nonetheless, I thought it was really great.
All right, very good. So two theatrical reviews here on the exclusive. Okay. These are exclusive reviews. Exclusive Friday Filibuster reviews, but they're exclusive. All right, Eric, how about you?
I checked something out on Netflix. I peruse the Netflix from time to time, and I came across this documentary that sort of proves that they'll make a documentary about anything.
Yeah.
Or if you're looking for a documentary about something very specific, chances are you can find it on Netflix. I watched a movie called Holy Rollers, which is
okay.
About...
Wait a minute. Let's see. Mac, can you guess what? Are you familiar with this movie?
I'm not.
Okay, so we just know the title's Holy Rollers. What would you guess that it's a documentary of?
That is the name of a roller derby team in Texas.
So you're going to say roller derby team, all right? I'm going to say, manufacturers of baking pins.
What's holy about that?
Bestiolly.
Oh, okay. I'm going to ask a second question. What's a baking pin?
Rolling pin, yeah.
Rolling pin.
Yeah, what is a baking pin?
You know, it's when your bread doesn't stay together and you have to pin it before you serve it.
Pin. But continue.
No, neither of those things. It's a documentary about a team of Christian card counters who play blackjack to earn money for their ministries.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. It's pretty fascinating. All of these, I think they're mostly in the Northwest. I think they may be based out of Seattle, at least like the main guy was. Just these two kind of, you know, they're all young people. I think they're all kind of like their own independent churches. And they just kind of said, you know, wouldn't it be cool to learn how to count cards? And so they just kind of formed this group. They call themselves the church team. And they go to casinos. They've trained to count the cards, which is not illegal, but obviously the casinos do not want you doing it. And the way they describe briefly how it works, and I've, you know, come across it in movies all the time and stuff like that, but basically, you know, you assign a value to each card as you see it across the deck, and you have this running total in your head. You've also memorized these equations, so you know when to bet what based on what the count is, and then the theory is that, you have the advantage then. You don't win every hand, but you can come out on top. And so, they do this. They go into these, you know, casinos and they play and they, you know, have investors and they, you know, pull in. I mean, at one point there's a meeting early on in the film where they talk about how like the quarter previous they pulled in $1.5 million. So it can go very well. But the movie kind of, starts to explore some of the, you know, the ideas of, you know, what does it mean to kind of bring these two seemingly kind of opposite ideas together, and how do they deal with that theologically, and how do they all stay together, and they have this honor system, you know, so if someone says this is what they earned, this is how long they played, then you have to take them at their word, and there's this whole kind of family aspect to it, and at the same time, there's a whole other part where all these casinos are just trying to get them to leave. It's called backing off. They try to back them off. So they're changing their appearance and going to all these places and trying to kind of outsmart the casinos. And they even have this sort of overarching philosophy where it's, you know, let's take down the casinos. The casinos are bad, so let's go in there and take the money. So it's a complicated subject. It's handled pretty well. I think it wanders a bit in places, but if you want to, you know, if you want to see a movie about something very weird and specific and unlike probably anything you've seen before, I recommend checking it out.
Very nice. And by the way, I do my Google search baking pin, and I came up with, did you mean rolling pin? So
well, so at least the internet is smarter than you.
That's true. I'll take that.
I'll also quickly mention, I just finished reading. We talk about the state a lot on this podcast. I just finished reading Michael Ian Black's memoir, You're Not Doing It Right.
Yeah.
Which is a memoir. It is not, it's funny, but it really is just kind of about his life and growing up and, you know, getting married and raising a family and stuff. It's a good read. I certainly enjoy it and recommend it. It's not, you know, state humor or anything like that, but it's a good book. So.
Nice.
There you go.
Write the book, like putting the books in there too.
Yeah. Sneak it in.
Mix up the genres. All right. And real quick for me, actually, this probably should go on to what's coming up, but I haven't finished the movie yet. I have a half hour left, and I am stunned to say that I am heartily enjoying Wrath of the Titans.
Really?
Which I got to review today, and I went in with a decent amount of trepidation because I thought the first one was mediocre at best, but for some reason, this thing is, I don't know, pushing all my buttons. I like what's going on, so it's been, you know, I'm about 2/3 of the way through, and I like it, so we'll see what the last 30 minutes brings. But yeah, so far, Wrath of Titans is getting a positive reaction from me. So tune in, you know, tune in sometime next week when the review shows, and you'll find out exactly what's going on. So, and it looks like Sam Worthington has ditched all pretense about his accent. I think he's totally embraced his New Zealand accent, Australian accent, wherever he's from. So, so there you go. I had to tear myself away to record this stupid podcast. I hope you're all right. So quickly, stuff coming up for us. A particular note, Matt. Go. What do you got?
Stuff coming up to review for the site.
Yeah.
This is a show that you and I have in common, Dave.
All right.
You reviewed the first volume, and I reviewed the second volume. It's made in New Zealand. and it's called The Tribe.
The Tribe, yes.
Yeah, you remember this one?
Yeah. So, worst opening theme song ever.
Oh, the theme song is so bland. Oh,
no,
man.
It's anti-God. What did you think?
Oh, man. Okay, well, first of all, for our listeners, this is made in New Zealand in 99, and it's a post-apocalypse show where a virus has killed off all the adults, but all the children are immune. So they're left just to fend for themselves. They form tribes and so on. And, the hair and the makeup and the fashion on this show has to be seen to be believed. They all paint their faces in crazy ways.
It's got a big cult following, though. So I'm surprised I didn't get a lot of hate mail. I mean, your judgment was only 8 points higher than mine. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it tells you what you need to know. But
it does have a huge cult following because it's got that combination of, you know, foreign, obscure, and weird. So instant cult following.
Yeah.
For all the post-apocalypse parts of the show are when it gets crazy, which is good. But those are sort of few and far between. And the rest of the time, the kids, they all live in this abandoned shopping mall. And the kids, they're...
It's
soap opera, yeah. It's like, you know, two of the characters are in love, but oh no, the third character is in love with one of them too, and now it's, you know, drama. And you got the eating disorders, and you got the teen pregnancy, and you've got the alcohol abuse, and it just goes on and on and on.
I'm particularly proud of you, because you squeezed a lot more writing out of it than I did. So comparing the two, you really, congratulations.
Well, you know, I've been studying a lot of, I'm really immersed in publishing right now, and one of the hottest things in publishing is the young adult dystopia.
Oh, okay, nice.
And, you know, The Hunger Games, for example.
Yes.
And The Tribe fits right into that genre. So it's something that's been on my mind a lot lately, but, now read The Hunger Games instead of watching The Tribe.
Yeah, and the theme song is The Dream Must Stay Alive? So it's like The Dream Must Stay Alive?
And they must have had like no music budget because the only score in the entire series is the instrumental version of the theme song.
Yeah, that's
so
rough.
During scary scenes, theme song. During, you know, romantic scenes, theme song. During sad scenes, the theme song. They use it over and over. It's the only music in the entire show.
Yeah. Ugh. All right.
And there's four more seasons, Dave.
I know. And by seasons, I mean they're like 52 episodes each, right?
Right, because the
wow.
You and I combined did the first season, and we
five seasons,
26
and
episodes each.
300 episodes. 300. Oh man.
So that's The Tribe.
All right, Eric.
Have not had a chance to dig into it yet, but I'm going to be reviewing Yellow Submarine on Blu-ray. The Beatles-related movie. My understanding is that they didn't even do the voices; they just kind of signed off on it and did had music. But I'll find out more. There's probably more to it than that, I'm sure.
And I also got breaking news for you. Michael emailed me, said that the newest Mystery Science Theater 3000 set has arrived.
Why did he email you?
I don't know. He just said, and you can tell Eric the new MST3K set has arrived. So there you go.
Excellent.
So I talked about Wrath of Titans, getting interested in that. I do have another movie that made its way to my porch. I did not request it, but I guess we tend to get tagged as, you know, hopefully Mac takes over as the official Tribe reviewer. So that's all yours, Mac, if you want. But I cannot escape my fate because The Note 3 is in my possession. I think we've talked about The Note here and there, but it's just like this Hallmark Channel Lifetime series, I guess. And I think I gave it a mildly favorable review, and then I've just been getting Note films constantly. So did not request it, but Michael knows. He knows what is in his writer's wheelhouse, I guess. So so I'm going to dive into that and see what awaits. So
what, refresh my memory. What is The Note about?
The Note stars Ted McGinley as a sports writer, and the first one details how he gets together with another writer, and she's like an advice columnist who, her editor is, I can't believe I know this plot still, but her editor is like, you need to do more, you need to generate more readership, and she finds this note, and she's essentially this love note between a couple that's She tracks down this couple that have been separated, and she brings them together. And along the way, she discovers life as well. Life and, you know, she discovers love, rather, as well with this Ted McGinley guy. And the second one, I can't quite remember. I know that Ted McGinley had a falling out with his son and over something. So I don't know if this third one holds. So
not a lot of speedboat chases.
Not a lot of speedboat. No, it's not. This is The Note. It's as pretty much as milquetoast as The Note sounds, you know. So so we shall see. All right. Take us onward, Max.
All right. We're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And you at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and then we'll scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for July 3rd. And this being summer, the studios are putting all their investments in theatrical releases, so we don't have a whole lot of big names on this week's list.
I see a little movie called Firestorm.
Firestorm is getting re-released. Yeah. I notice they haven't changed the cover art. They're keeping the deer in the headlights look.
No Blu-ray.
He looks just as confused about the lack of Blu-ray as we do.
Another next series of George Gently, which is a fan favorite around here, around these parts. Another season of this one is actually something I have to review, Mannix, the seventh season.
Oh, yeah.
I love Mannix.
He's a tough guy, right?
He's a tough guy. He is a tough Mannix.
I see a movie on here that it was one of the earliest reviews I ever wrote for a film called Joshua, which is like a thriller about this boy who ends up like driving his parents crazy. Like he has this whole, you know, kind of a, you know, twisted kid horror movie. It wasn't great. But it's right here. You'll see it.
Hey, here's a Blu-ray of Treasure Planet. I remember, like, I know that kind of got panned a little bit, but I remember kind of sort of enjoying it. But that's all I have are fleeting memories.
Yeah, this is a new 10th anniversary edition. So it's got new stuff on it. I always take me off the DVD. It said audio commentary on the back of the box, but there's no commentary on the DVD itself. Huh. That drove me up a wall. But the movie, it's okay. I mean, it's got some real cool kind of visuals.
That's what I remember. Mainly like the awesome flying ship and whatnot.
Right.
Jeez, you're right. There's not a ton to work with here this week. All right, well, I'm tapped.
Another Looney Tunes Platinum release. So Platinum Play. Oh, that's Volume 1, so I guess that's a re-release.
Street Defense looks pretty badass. See that? Street Defense. It's what in the world? Learn and understand. What? You'll learn how to defend yourself with a cane, an umbrella, a magazine, a broom, a cap, and anything you can use to protect yourself from any aggression.
Wow.
So have you ever wanted to learn how to defend yourself using a cap? And I love that the lightning is striking in the background. Look at these thugs with the lightning. Thank goodness you've got your cap.
Yeah. Yeah, when lightning strikes, you can block it with your cane.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's with the umbrella.
So you hand your umbrella to the thug if they get struck by the lightning and you run.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yes, that's true. I mean, maybe this was Dead Rising 2 and you combine those elements into some kind of zombie weapon, but yeah. All right, well, inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Mac.
Carry On Abroad.
That's good. Okay. As Eric?
Well, actually, I was gonna go for that double feature. I'll do the other half. Carry On Dick.
I didn't even see that one.
It's a double feature. I'm surprised. I thought you were gonna go for both of them. That's what I was gonna do.
Oh, jeez. All right. I'll just go with Monumental. Oh, and actually, right underneath Monumental, a quick shout out for Rocco's Modern Life, which I just reviewed for the site too. That's you know, it was beyond. I was too old to watch it when it aired, but watching it now, it's pretty surreal and funny and adult for Nicktoon, I guess. So, anyone of you guys ever watch Rocko's Modern Life?
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah,
that was after my time.
Yeah, I think just out of our orbit there, but yeah, pretty weird and pretty funny. Probably one of the better Nicktoon releases I've seen. Just a little hint. One of the episodes is called Schnitheads. Rocco's friend is kidnapped by a cult that worships sausages.
Nice.
Yeah, very odd. So that might be right up your alley, Mac.
I think I'm going to dig that.
All right, ambush topics, you know, this works. Eric, why don't you kick us off?
All right, I recently watched something else on Netflix, another documentary, a little more mainstream, Woody Allen, the documentary. This is the two-part, like, three-and-a-half-hour documentary about Woody Allen's life and work. And I've seen several of these kind of long-form documentaries, one I did recently about George Harrison, or a good bet. So a film or filmmaker documentary you'd like to see made, subtext being it probably never will.
Let's see. That's a tricky one, because the it never will part kind of that's wrong. My first thought was George Lucas, but
that documentary will probably get made someday. Yeah? Forget the it never will. Just things you'd like to see made. Keep it open, you know.
So just a documentary you'd like to see made. Is that what you're saying?
Right. In my head, I'm thinking like a long, massive, like two-night extravaganza.
Right.
Well, so like a 24-hour movie till time, maybe, or the clock, or whatever.
Not that exactly. I was thinking more like
it's more in depth.
And you can't count like two-hour documentaries on the making of Gymkhana.
You could. I'm thinking like it runs like 192 minutes. You know, it fits on one DVD, but they got to put this, you know, the deleted scenes on a second one.
Oh wow!
You know, that kind of. It's not that. I'm not that specific. I'm not restricting you. You can say Gymkhana. You can say George Lucas. Just do whatever. I don't care.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll go back to George Lucas. Just, you know, after all these years, it'd be nice to have a real in-depth sit-down interview with a guy and really put him on the spot and have him tell us what he was thinking.
Yeah.
Do you want like an Errol Morris documentary of George Lucas then?
The interviewer would have to be someone who's enough of a fan to ask the fun questions, but who is also enough of a tough guy to ask the real, put him on the spot and get some real answers out of him. So I'm not sure who the right person would be for that. But
you get to think you do a good cop, bad cop scenario.
Oh, that would could work, yeah.
How about speaking of Nicktoons, how about a, I don't think this is far-fetched, or maybe not even that interesting, but a documentary on Nickelodeon. The network good. Nickelodeon. Like, you know, get into all those questions. Like, what is green slime made of? You know? Who came up with the idea for turkey television? Wienerville. What's up with that? You know, when did Dave Coulier get involved with Nickelodeon? You know, all those kinds of things. So,
there's a lot of things. So, stand-up act.
What's that?
Wienerville started out as a stand-up comedy act.
Nice.
And it was adapted into a show.
That's true. Yeah, I remember all these, like, obscure Nickelodeon, like, don't just sit there. I remember it was a kid's talk show. I'd really want to know, like, why was Legends of the Hidden Temple made so it'd be impossible for a kid to win? You know, give me that scoop.
Boy, everyone's answers are better than the one I didn't. I should have come up with an answer for this one. I think all I had was Voyage of the Rock Aliens. which is a dumb answer. You guys gave actually good, thoughtful answers.
Well, Voyage of the Rock Aliens, we always need to carry that torch. I do not understand. We've talked about this before, but in all honesty, what is preventing that from seeing the light of day?
It's got to be music rights, right? Because there's so many songs.
Got to be, right?
I'm sure Rima's holding out.
It's terrible. It's a terrible movie, but I mean, it would have valuable cult status, or even if Troma got their paws on it.
Yeah, it's just probably Jermaine Jackson.
Jermaine Jackson. Yeah, but all you have to do, it's not hard to get rid of, you know, it's not hard to get out from under that copyright, because the part he's in doesn't make any sense in the rest of the
movie. Well, maybe Pia Zadora is playing hardball.
Maybe she is. She in the Mustangs, you know, then I can let go without a fight. Oh, well. I was, speaking of that, I was thinking of Punk Vacation. I think that doesn't have a DVD release either. Probably because it's terrible.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Fantasy Mission Force, the movie. Remember, you watched that. No, Fantasy Mission Force, the movie.
Of course, great movie.
Yeah. That is a great movie. I want to watch it again, but I only own it on VHS.
You do? It's got a DVD release.
Oh, does it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
For like 50 cents from Amazon.
Jackie Chan's in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, that's lunacy right there, that movie.
That great opening, like a slideshow where they're trying to put the team together. I forget who they name, but it's like fictional characters. All fictional characters. Rock, he's a boxer. He doesn't know anything about military. Thing like that. It's great.
That's right. We surprisingly talked very little about Fantasy Mission Force.
That's a great movie.
Really track that down for surreal cult like ridiculousness.
I mean, there's that whole like scene in the restaurant where the guy's eating up all the food, and then there's a dance number, and it's a fight. It's great.
Ghost stories and
that sounds like the greatest movie ever.
It is kind of the greatest movie ever.
Some crazy Amazon women who jump around and fire scarves. It gets really bloody at the end. It's post-apocalyptic, so it's like Mad Max. So I mean, it's nutsoid. And Jackie Chan.
Yeah, it is a real movie, right? It wasn't just imagine at all. It wasn't like a mass hysteria.
It's for real. Well, as we inevitably Google search for that, my ambush topic to you guys is helicopters in action movies, memorable helicopter moments in action movies. And because there's a lot of helicopter moments, I'm just going to limit it to action movies, I guess.
I think at one point we talked about Die Hard 3. Was it Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Yeah, very good.
Was that what you were going to pick?
That was what I was going to do, but that's a good one. That's very good.
Yeah, the helicopter at the end. The fight.
Yeah, I think that was a tacked-on ending. It was not the original.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, the,
really?
The original ending.
Felt a little bit like that.
Very, I mean, you want to talk about, typically those alternate endings, they sound exciting, but they're usually disappointing. They're just like maybe one alteration of a piece of dialogue. But Die Hard 3 had a hugely different ending. So. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, there are 15 used copies of Fantasy Mission Force on Amazon for $53.
Nice. It's pretty good.
All right, Mac, you got a helicopter in an action movie?
I'm trying to remember the specifics of the scene, but in Broken Arrow, there's a great bit where that helicopter chasing.
A lot of helicopter carnage in there.
They're out in the desert, and the helicopter's chasing Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis.
Yes.
Running from it. I still remember some really cool stunts in that scene. But
trying to enter the helicopter right, flipping over.
Yeah. I should.
Vertical.
Is that the scene where he shoots the... I don't know the technical term. The little propeller that's in the back of the helicopter.
Yeah, he shoots that, and of course it disables the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's how it works.
That might have happened in a lot of movies, though. So.
I think it's called a helicopter pin.
I think it's a helicopter pin. That's correct. That's good. Good helicopter pornography right there. I guess I'll go with just the helicopter uses a weapon, and the last Boy Scout bad guy falls right into the blades.
Yeah.
5 gallons of blood goes in the windshield. I always recall that being particularly gruesome. So I'm actually surprised that there hasn't been more bad guys falling into helicopter blades over the years. But
it's a little tricky. It takes some planning.
And actually, helicopters are very, I think, very well established in James Bond movies. You know, multiple, like the opening in You Only Live Twice, the remote control helicopter. Excellent, crazy stunt work, as always. No, not You Only Live. No, For Your Eyes Only. For Your Eyes Only, that's right. He scoops up Blofeld in his wheelchair and drops him.
That was great. Yeah.
That's a great sequence. Absolutely. Yeah. And then in License to Kill, they jump on this giant Coast Guard helicopter and go fishing for Robert Davies' airplane, which is pretty cool as well.
Has anyone ever been killed by helicopter blades going like upwards into it as opposed to down?
I can't recall, but that's
prime
way to go.
What's that?
In Dawn of the Dead, a zombie climbs up on that box and gets the top of his head hacked off by the blade. Nice.
But does he like fly upwards?
I don't think so.
Or just kind of like, because I'm thinking maybe like it takes place at like an open air circus with like a big like trampoline or something. And he gets thrown off, bounces to the trampoline, and the helicopter is flying past, and you go right up into the blades.
Good. And you think that was a missed opportunity for Octopussy, because the whole last part happened in the circus.
And the blood flies, and it hits the clowns, and it's very fun.
That's right. And then the other clown next to him spritzes him with a seltzer bottle to wash the blood off.
Ah, this is great. This writes itself. It's really going together. Movies write themselves.
I mean, I'm going to transcribe this podcast. Okay, Mac, finish this.
All right. I just saw Brave, which has a significant scene in the movie with a bear. Yeah. So movies with bears.
Jump right in with the bear.
Okay.
The bear. Anybody remember the bear?
Yeah, the entire movie was just in nature with, like, no people, right?
That's right. I just remember it. I don't remember what it's about, really. I remember it as a bear wandering around. Maybe trying to get back to his... I might have to do some research on this.
It was separated from its cub and had to go find it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a nature documentary.
It's like a scripted... An orphan bear cub hooks up with an adult male as they try to dodge human hunters.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
Bart
not...
the Bear.
As yes, from, I remember Bart the Bear.
Bart the Bear from from The Edge. He's in this. And he's teamed up with Uke the Bear, which is ironic because Boston traded Uke to the White Sox.
I know. My t-shirt is worthless.
Oh, also in The Bear was a bad guy from Jet Li's Kiss of the Dragon. So.
Oh, man. I'm totally remembering the movie right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay. I think you've talked enough about the bear.
It's a documentary night for me. I'm going to go with Grizzly Man.
Oh, yeah.
This is a pretty harrowing documentary about a guy who loved bears and lived with the bears, who's kind of a real hippy-dippy type, and then he was eventually killed by a bear. Pretty intense.
Yes.
So not at all like with the one you talked about at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
Kind of a downer. Okay, Mac.
That was a downer, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I never saw Grizzly Man. I know it's excellent, but I don't remember seeing it. Maybe because I've heard that the dude gets chopped. So. Okay. All right, Mac, what's your pair?
Well, mine is very silly. In The Muppets Take Manhattan, there's a scene where... all the Muppets go their separate ways, and Fozzie Bear decides he's going to hibernate. And there's a scene of him surrounded by... Now, I've always debated this with my friends over the years, whether or not Fozzie is actually hanging out in that cave with real bears, or if those were, like, Muppet bears that looked like real bears.
Oh, I know. I always thought it was real bears, but maybe I'm not.
You're supposed
to think they're real bears, right?
Yeah. Because, you know, of course, Fozzie is a Muppet, and he's surrounded by actual bears who are hibernating.
That's pretty funny. I like that. That's some funny. Yeah.
It's a whole good, like, montage sequence where they're reading the postcards from all the Muppets as they're off doing their own thing.
Yeah, because, Fozzie is, like, the least likely bear you'd expect to be hibernating in the woods, you know?
It's the first time he's ever done anything even remotely bear-like.
Bear-like, yeah. He's not bear-like at all, so, yeah. I'll throw in a little honorable mention for Bear. The bear from... The Great Outdoors, if you recall.
Oh.
He got the hair on his butt and his head blown off by John Candy's shotgun, so. A lot of mention. All right, and on that positive note, John Candy's shotgunning a bear's butt, then let's end this. Dish of the Friday Filibuster, thank you for listening. Friday Filibuster, DVDverdict.com is the email address. And thank you to Eric, and thank you to Mac. Mac, take us away.
Dancing is forbidden.